You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Good evening to you, and once again, welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is the 30th of January 2025. I suppose we are almost ending January, depending on where you were or where you are. When it comes to your finances, because as you know, this is a business show, we love money. And we love talking about money, right? And so we hope that January is coming to an end in a good way for you. We still want to wish you the best for 2025. It is a Thursday. That means it is Shapeshifter Thursday right here on the show. And this is an opportunity for us to talk to some leading people across the African continent, something that I really admire and love about this show is we get to give you some of the best people, some of the best minds, at least on the African continent. And we love it. We're not going anywhere. We are still going to continue to do that. And today is no different at all because my guest this evening, really excited about it, it is Jabulile Mbatha. And Jabulile, of course, is an award-winning journalist. Listen to this. I need to be very slow on this one. Award-winning journalist, former radio news reporter, African literature enthusiast, and that is just a few of the things that she has done and is continuing to do, and she's joining us on the line. Ma'am, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening to you and your listeners, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for giving us your time. Really appreciate you. Are you well? How are things?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's been a tough month with a lot of stories,
yes.
But I'm doing well, thank you.
Fantastic. Well, tough month, we are here, I suppose, eh?
Yes.
Well, we hope everything works out very well, and apologies, and we hope all things work out very well. But thank you for your time. We really appreciate that. And may God continue to give you strength as well. Hopefully he will do that. But thank you so much for your time this evening. Let's try and see. I think we'll try and see if that noise feedback goes away as we continue. If it's something that, I think we'll try and see how we get that one going on our side and try to fix it. But once again, thank you so much for your time this evening. Let us start here. How does it feel when you hear people talking about, for example, award-winning journalist, radio, former news and radio reporter, African literature and all this stuff? Does it feel nostalgic? Do you get to a point where you're like, is that really me?
Honestly, it's a proud moment for me even to have been featured on shows like this.
Yes.
And having been introduced as someone who's actually done great work. It's really something that I'm proud of. I think I worked really hard to get to where I am. In fact, I continue to work hard.
Yes.
Some would say I'm a workaholic, actually. So I take pride in the work that I do. And I don't like to sort of downplay it. Because honestly, it is important for, you know, young black people to work hard. And once those rewards come in, you know, it's good for us to talk about it because more people can get inspired and, you know, try and do the same things.
Yes, that's very true. And I love that point. There's no need to downplay them at all. You've worked very hard and continue to work very hard as well. So that's why we need to shine the spotlight on such things. Do you get offended when people say you are a workaholic or you love it?
It's the truth.
Okay.
So I'm actually fine with it. It's just that I always strive to make a great balance.
Yes.
So I equally work hard and play hard.
Is it a case of, you know, you work hard and it's just, I suppose, when people look from the outside, they feel like, oh, she's working hard, but you're like, but this is just me working.
Yes, that is true. I think once you do something that you are passionate about and something that you love, it doesn't feel so much like work. Yes, it is work because I have to go to a certain place and produce work and deliver. But it's part of my life. It's part of who I am. Storytelling is who I am. So
love it. Love it. Do you have a story in mind right now? Not putting you on the spot. But I'm sure there's quite a lot, eh?
Yes, there's a lot of stories. My mind is just all over the place now.
That's lovely. That's lovely. Okay, before we even get to talking about you as our shapeshifter this evening, I want to just ask around 2024. How was it for you and 2025? What are you planning? Not necessarily telling us, but how do you see 2025, I suppose, in retrospect of 2024?
I'm quite excited about this year, actually, because I'm freelancing currently, which gives me freedom to actually do more than one thing.
Mm.
So I recently got into documentary making.
Okay.
I'm researching for a true crime documentary.
That's exciting.
It is exciting, but it keeps me up at night.
I'm sure.
You can imagine the kinds of stories we go through. I'm also actually with a radio station.
Okay.
Radio 702.
Yes.
And yes, that takes up a lot of my time. It's quite demanding, but I mean, even on the first day when I started there, it was quite overwhelming and it's a lot of work. But I remember just saying to myself, you know, I would do it all over again. It was just so fulfilling. And that's the kind of work that I want to go into this year, just continuing doing.
Yes.
I just want to do stuff that I'm passionate about, tell more stories. And I want to go back into writing. I'm actually a writer. This is actually where it started.
With
writing.
Yeah.
So I'm planning to open a blog as well. And
fantastic. That's amazing. That's really amazing. Now, take us back then. Where were you born? What was it like? What were some of the things you can remember about your childhood?
I had a very informative childhood, I'd like to say.
Yes.
I was born in Soweto.
Okay.
I lived there for a couple of years, and then when it was time for grade one, I moved to Boksburg.
Oh, okay.
Yes, in the East Rand.
Yes.
And I studied here and went on to Sunwood Park High School.
Yeah.
And you know, in high school, everyone has this big decision to make about what's next,
exactly.
Right? And I think that decision really only came to me in the matric year. So I had been writing and reading quite a lot. You know, my family is a family that was really engaged in the media. So Sundays would look like my father having newspapers all over the house.
Ooh, okay.
We would always be called to watch the news at 7 o'clock on TV.
Yeah.
And my mom, for as long as I can remember, had always a radio station, you know, those old ones. And it was on one particular radio station.
Yes.
But we always had that in the background. So you've got books, you've got newspapers, you have to watch the news. And we're constantly engaging in different topics because my parents from a young age wanted us to have an opinion. And so they would ask us, what do you think of this? So that's why I say I think I had quite an informative childhood. It was quite amazing, you know, growing up in this neighborhood, because there's also just different kinds of people, different races.
Yeah.
And even that on its own is quite worthwhile.
Quite exciting.
Right? So that was the kind of childhood I had.
So where in Soweto is this? Because I'm a Sowetan, and coincidentally, I'm an East Rander as we speak. So I heard that all good things come from the East, and I thought, okay, let me go to the East because all good things come. But from Soweto, where were you born? I'm from Dobsonville.
So I was born in Mdeni.
Mdeni, okay.
Yes, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother's house is also there. And yeah, so I've got some fond, you know, memories from there, you know, just playing as kids.
And some of the schools there?
So I went to a creche in town because that's where my parents were working. But from grade one, I had already moved to Boksburg.
To Boksburg, okay. Yeah, so, okay. All right. No, that's interesting. Yeah. So even then, Terminus in Toza, where I was like, yeah, I just turned here, Terminus, and here I am, library. Exactly. Now, you that took me back from. Because that's my childhood days. I was like, hey, Bo, we come from the same area because, you know, I don't know, but if you, I went to school at Zola, right, at Dr. Vilakazi. Mm. And so we had this Zocha Zem thing, Mdeni, Zola, Jablani, going this, all these schools that were there, you know, those were some of the fondest memories as well. And then Boksburg, it's predominantly white. So what were the schools like?
Yes, the schools were predominantly white. I had a lot of white friends, Indian friends, colored friends, and a lot of black friends as well.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting because you realize there's a whole other world out there, guys.
Yes.
Sometimes the environment where you grow up kind of shows you one perspective of things. But, you know, once I had shifted and seen this other world, it was quite interesting to learn that, you know, we're all different. It was interesting.
It was interesting, right?
Yeah,
that's amazing. And in terms of socioeconomic challenges or socioeconomic landscape, at least in Boksburg at the time, and I'm now trying to really zone in and on the differences that you're speaking about in a whole different world where you find it's a predominantly white area. Perhaps there's a little bit of privilege, some might even argue when you are there, but there's obviously what people of our color, for example, suffer with from a socioeconomic point of view. Were you exposed to those? Did you see them in the community, or it was just privilege that you saw? And I suppose that as a child, it was difficult to even make the difference.
Definitely. I think obviously when I arrived in these schools and seeing all this privilege from, you know, other children and the schools and, you know, learning the languages and understanding at a different level.
Yeah.
I think obviously as a child, maybe I didn't fully grasp that, you know, I existed in two different worlds because, you know, when we'd go back and visit Mhlambe Emdeni, and, you know, now you start to see the challenges that your peers have, like maybe they don't have food or maybe there's an electricity or water issue, and you go back home in Boksburg and it's just all this privilege and you realize, wow, you are, you know, privileged yourself now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think just growing up, you know, it was comfortable. I must be honest with you. It was a, you know, service delivery was great.
Yeah.
We had our lights on all the time.
Yeah.
You know, electricity and water.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I realized that those really are, you know, just different worlds.
Yes, different worlds. Mm. And would you say that has contributed to an extent, if it has? And if not, then that's also okay. But would you say that has contributed to your worldview, to who Ujamlile is today? When people talk about Sis Jablile and you're like, this is me. And I'm asking because I don't think there's anything wrong in, I suppose, appreciating where privilege was, right? Because we often glorify, grew up poor, okay, we get it. But it does not necessarily negate and make it wrong for people who may have grown up in privilege to say, I grew up in privilege.
Certainly, I do acknowledge fully that, you know, I grew up in a very privileged home. There's a lot of access that I had, you know, even just to education. And to access to information, which informed my future. And I'm very grateful for my parents for having made the decision for us to move, because I don't think that I would have, you know, made the same decisions if maybe I was, you know, at a disadvantaged area, or my environment was exposed to maybe a lot of wrongs, which it is, you know. I mean, I still go back then and see how some of my peers turned out and the influences some of them got to them, and that's quite unfortunate. But I will say I am grateful for the privilege, because it shaped who I am, and understanding of differences and the reality of South Africa actually fuels my passion when it comes to journalism, because I want to tell those stories, because I've been there. I've been in all these different places. So just that information and access to information informed how I tell my stories. And I think if someone would look closely to the kinds of stories, the human interest stories, you'd see that there's obviously, you know, passion.
Yes.
Because there's an understanding.
Yes, there's an understanding. And I suppose having tapped into both worlds, that on its own is a mine, right? Because it makes you flexible to be able to deal with Soweto and its issues and stories and mine those stories from that side, but also mine from a privileged place, Boksburg and all these other suburban areas where perhaps without the ability to be articulate and maybe to an extent being judged. And I think that's what happens quite a lot of the time. We get judged by how we speak, how we appear and all that. But being able to dabble into both worlds, I'm sure that that on its own is something to really celebrate.
It is. And actually, you're jogging my memory now because, you know, with some stories that I've done, sometimes, you know, I'd take my younger sister and she'd be shocked to kind of see maybe, you know, those dangerous areas or, you know, just, and she wouldn't understand how am I able to just go in there and feel relaxed and just do what I have to do. But going back to sort of a privileged spaces, you know, I've done interviews with, you know, CEO of top companies, companies turning over millions. And, you know, when you walk into that room at, you know, before, when they see you, they think, oh, just a young girl, you know, probably doesn't know. But once they hear me speak, then I gain some respect because you see that this is someone who's, you know, studied the facts and is here to make sure that, you know, we get answers and people are held accountable.
Ah.
So I do gain respect in areas because I've made a name for myself.
Yes.
Right. And and I'm also quite relatable. So I can place me anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that's what also drew me into loving investigative journalism because I realized how many spaces I can occupy and really just be the best of me.
That's really amazing. Now, let's then talk about this journalism and how you discovered that this is the space that you want to go in. And I'm asking because I'm pretty sure your conventional careers, you know, from especially from the Black community, right? Be a lawyer, be a doctor, you know, those are conventional things. But no one really talks about the, in a quote unquote, and I think the world is moving, but you know, back in the days, and then I'm sure things like journalism were not things that really parents would encourage their children to get into. But where did you discover the love for journalism and when did you decide that this is what I'm going to do?
I think my environment or my home rather really did fuel, you know, this passion and this love because, as I said, like the influences were the radio station, TV and newspapers all the time and reading. My sister was a bookworm. My older sister was a bookworm. So I didn't at the time, you know, growing up, I didn't realize how much of it I'm feeding off. But what I then did was write. And you know, it was just casual writing. On everyone's birthday, I'd write quite an elaborate message and heartfelt. It's quite colorful. And my dad one day, because he loves bragging about his children, you know, so he was showing his friends the message, the birthday message I had written. He's like, I think this child is a writer, you know. And just from that conversation, you know, it then was another conversation of actually why don't you pursue writing or journalism or you know, something in that field because you're clearly talented. And that's when I made the decision. Just like that, you know, I applied to university. It was even a late application. But I was quite fortunate that I got in. And I studied journalism. So I did a BA. And then an honors. So the BA had subjects like your history, your media studies, African literature, which I love. And politics. So all those, you know, when you think about it, really assist you in thinking about what journalism should be. And then the honors then was, you know, journalism. And I was quite lucky to just go straight into the industry and everything sort of just fell into place.
That's lovely. And please school us in a few seconds or so for some of us who are novices in this space. You said investigative journalist. There are other types of or sports journalist, at least those ones we know, right? We listen to radio, sports journalist and all that. What are the major ones? So investigative journalists, sports, and others?
Politics is a major one. Political reporting is quite a huge form of journalism. And I think, well, just generally everything is politics, right?
Yes, yes.
So that's quite an important one. But you really have to, you know, have the passion and the understanding for it to do it. Investigative is also quite complicated and really needs you to have the heart for it.
Yes.
You get to learn some difficult things.
Yes.
And quite recently, you know, or rather a niche that's really developing in South Africa is environmental, which I also think is quite important. Environmental journalism.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, sort of experts in those fields looking at different kinds of things that influence the environment, whether you know, it's you know, air pollution, you know, looking at how the oceans are doing. Just environmental is quite an important one. And health and those are also specialties. You know, we've got people who are predominantly focused on what the sectors are doing.
Mm.
So those are just some of the, you know, different and
different ones,
really,
right?
Important kind of journalism. And just to mention, I wanted to actually do art.
Oh, okay.
Before I got into investigative journalism, my heart was just thinking, look, I'm going to work for the Mail and Guardian's art and culture section.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to write about what I'm passionate about.
Yeah,
but I guess, you know, life had other plans for me.
Yeah. But I'm sure you collect art here and there and, you know, still satisfy that love for art.
I do, because, you know, investigative journalism is quite intense. And usually you really just deal with a lot of horror stories, right? It can be quite emotionally taxing.
Yes.
So my sort of outlet is art. I go to art galleries all the time. I'm reading about art. I go to movies. I just art is a way to sort of come back to myself.
Yeah, love it, love it. Yeah. Now, you mentioned something that's really interesting, if I remember just now as we were speaking, right, that sometimes when you walk into the room, there are people who look at you like, this young lady, you know, and then they get surprised when you now hit very hard. I'm just interested in one where you hit very hard and then they're like, okay, yeah, no, this didn't go as we thought it was going to go, looking at this young lady that came in here. And, you know, I'm sure they were like, this young, beautiful lady, we're not going to have a tough time here. Is there one that you can remember?
I don't know if I'm allowed to mention the company.
Maybe let's reserve them so that they don't come for us.
Okay, but it's quite a large farm in South Africa. In fact, it's international.
Right? Sure.
I remember they had searched me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Right? So when we requested the interview, I requested the interview days ahead because it's in a different province.
Yeah.
So we had to do proper planning.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw they were looking through my social media. And my social media has a lot of art.
Ooh.
So they...
got confused.
I'm pretty sure they, you know, they thought, well, you know, she's young. She's probably an art writer or whatever they thought.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They were very unprepared for the interview. You know, I've never seen a grown man sweat on camera from just, you know, me asking questions. And those are just, and that wasn't the first time. I think people sometimes they don't respect the work that we do.
Yes,
I was, you know, speaking on behalf of those farmers whose rights had been violated.
Yeah.
You know, I felt quite strongly about the story. So I was thorough and I was factual.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is that made them think they shouldn't take this seriously.
Oh,
or maybe they had a strategy to defend themselves.
Yes.
But, you know, with everything that I had presented, it just went the other way. So, those are just some of the experiences that I have.
That's amazing, right? And as a storyteller, I'm sure there's quite a bit. I think we need to have a part two just on the stories that you've covered so far and get a sense of it. But that must be quite an experience as well. And I'm sure doing that is your passion, unearthing the truth around some of these things. And we see them. We won't mention the Zuptas. But I'm sure there's stuff there that also people chew on from an investigative journalism point of view and all those sort of stuff. What would you say is the high so far in your career?
Wow. Tough question.
I'm sure there's plenty, you know?
I think maybe the most rewarding thing for me is when a case study or maybe someone that I've done a story on comes back and says, Department A, B, and C fixed this, and this is life-changing for me. You know, you know, they don't owe me anything, but it's so fulfilling hearing when, you know, a problem has been fixed because a story has been told. And I think, those are just some of the things. I mean, many times people have come back and said, you know, if we didn't go ahead with the story, maybe I wouldn't have got my money. I wouldn't have my house. I wouldn't have this. And even the little things, sometimes, you know, people just have small problems, but it just took a phone call from a journalist, you know, to get the attention of the people to do things right. And that just gives me peace at night.
Ooh, love that. And what is the challenges so far?
I think my biggest challenge is dealing with the hard realities of the threats, right? So sometimes I will have been in various threatening situations. I've been held hostage. I've been held at gunpoint. And, you know, it's, I've had people make death threats. You know, I've been held against my will. There's a lot that has happened. And I think, but that's the reality of investigative journalism. You're digging into places that, you know, people didn't think, you know, would be unearthed. And it can get quite dangerous.
Quite dangerous, eh?
But it has never stopped me. I'm quite excited for the future.
So for young future investigative, how do you pick these stories where you're like, this one, this is it?
You know, when a lot of this, in fact, a lot of stories can be turned into investigative stories, right? It's just about how much depth you can find in the story. It really, more than anything, I think one of my first mentors and former employer, she taught me that it's so important to research. Because I remember when I started investigative journalism, for weeks I spent researching, reading, understanding, and just when you think you found what you were looking for, think more. That's the secret, you know. Don't ever think, oh well, we've exposed that millions have been lost and that's that, and you're excited. No, there's probably five other things happening there, you know. So it's researching. I cannot emphasize that
It's really important.
Because you have to get to a level of understanding just the concept and maybe how the things work for you to be then able to look for more clues, you know?
Yes.
Sure. And asking questions. I worked very closely with a lawyer, the company lawyer. You know, I always do, because these stories can get tricky. But asking questions help.
Sure. All right. As we draw to a close, like I said, I love really topics about money. That's one of the things that I really love. And I was thinking the other day when we were now getting into this year's season of the show, like, probably they're thinking, yeah, Tandi Malilo, let's just keep him for that reason. But how would you you know, describe your relationship with money?
I think now I have a much better relationship with money.
Okay.
Because, you know,
okay.
I've grown up, I've made mistakes, and I've allowed myself to learn from mistakes. So definitely a much better relationship than before. You know, when you just start working, you're excited and it's nothing really makes sense at the time, but it's so important to have conversations with people who understand money better. So that you're more informed and your decisions make sense and you don't have regrets. That's the most important thing.
And is there one regret or one mistake that you look back at and like, andizi and sabui up?
I think my regret when it comes to money is not saving earlier.
Not saving earlier.
But at the same time, I forgive myself for that because I had to learn that. Sometimes you have to go through something to have a proper understanding of
That's true.
So I didn't save much earlier or when my career began.
Yes.
But that has now changed.
Sure. Lovely. Now, let's talk about then the younger sister, Blil, right? Now, with, I don't know why South African politicians like hindsight, but I'm just going to try and say the same thing. But with hindsight, what would be your message to the younger sister, Blil?
My message would be that, you know, you can do anything that you put your mind to. Like, just keep believing in yourself, right? You know, sometimes you have that thing boiling inside of you because it's like you know the potential, but there's just something holding you back.
Yeah.
I would say don't hold back. Do not hold back. Just, you know, do it all. Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. And would you change anything if you look back as well? Is there one thing in your life you're like, if given another opportunity, I would change this bit?
Maybe relaxing on some of... you know, like the workload.
Okay.
Maybe I would have changed that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's difficult for me to even say that now because I'm still doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess maybe finding the balance. Finding a balance sooner, that would have contributed quite a lot to my mental well-being.
Ah.
I think that's also quite an important one because in as much as the work is fun and exciting and tiring at the same time, it's important to just sit down and reflect on how you're doing mentally. So right now I always assess myself, how is my emotional capacity? How am I doing mentally?
Lovely.
How much can I take on and what are the boundaries?
Lovely. And that balance, just while we are there, has it ever affected family life as well? I'm pretty sure that there's times when you couldn't go to a family event because there's a story that you need to finish.
Yes, many times I've had to sacrifice family, you know, functions because of work. But I've also become the, you know, the person in the family who's always got a laptop. you know, when I'm there. Even from high school, when I think about it, you know, my family would tell me or my wife would say, you always would come with your homework.
Hey,
now you're coming with your laptop.
With your
So really, I've just always been that person
who's
constantly working. Sometimes, you know, I'd miss out on some things and I'd feel quite bad or miss my family. But, you know, when there's an opening, then I'd try and make up for it.
Just as a thought, as we're rounding up here, I'm thinking now, right? Remember back in the days, we used to have ladies, eskolweni, who used to kuxela asidori, you know, wadlula la, wangena la, wahlala, 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 wakhuluma na, wakhuluma, wasuka wezala. Did you used to do that as well? Oh my goodness.
Yes. Oh, you called it. And I guess those are all the signs, you know.
Those are signs,
I'm
right?
Always the ones, you know, telling stories, talkative. I used to do that.
Oh my.
That's
what I'm saying. I think we need just a part two on the stories. And we're going to start with those stories that you used to talk about back in the day, escorted. So for the teachers that used to teach you, in case they are wondering what happened to the desks where you used to sit, I'm just telling them now without that something was happening with those desks.
Yes.
And you need to ask Mrs. Jablil, how the desk is, why name Bobo Ganga? This is the story.
That's so true. But, you know, in the later years in high school, then I was always the one reading, you know, in the English classes, they would be like, well, you know, you're the storyteller.
Yeah.
And I think my English teachers just saw that I love reading and storytelling.
Yes.
So we'd have to rotate the book. But I remember every time the book came to me, next thing I'm reading five pages instead of one. But you know, I guess it all contributed to the better of me. So.
You're an award-winning journalist, news reporter, quite a bit that you're doing literature as well. I know it's one of the things, like you said, quite very enthusiastic about. Is there still more? Like, haven't you reached a point like, I pelele manje, I think I've lived my life. 10 years from
definitely
now, what's the, okay, where are we going from here?
No, I think, look, right now, something I really want to pursue is actually art curating.
Oh, okay.
So last year I had my first art exhibition.
Yeah.
It was hosted in Mabuneng. And
nice.
This year I'm working with more artists. And
yeah.
again, that will also come together with the writing.
Yeah.
As I've said, that I will have a blog. And I wanna also do quite a bit of travel journalism.
Oh,
so
okay.
last year,
okay.
I did sort of lifestyle writing,
mm-hmm.
travel pieces. Long form features, which was that I didn't even know that I had that in me.
So I
think that is also something I want to pursue.
Yes.
But even with traveling, I think, you know, there will be some investigative stories. I was just speaking to a colleague just earlier today about maybe just visiting the SADC area and seeing what other stories in Africa that we can tell. So there's quite a lot happening.
There's quite a lot.
Just looking at Mozambique, for instance.
Yeah.
Those are just without giving too much.
Yeah.
But that would be something that I'd like to pursue as well.
I just have one request. If you can just grant this one request, right? Is that when you are traveling, can I be in the little book? I don't know how I'll fit. I'll find a way to fit.
Right, by all means.
There. And when you go through border control, just knuckle me in, you know, and I can just, and I will meet that side because I want to travel Africa as well. I think it's a beautiful continent. So,
that's fine.
No one will know. I can promise you that much. I'm a dark skinned guy, so no one will know.
That's fine. We can definitely do that.
We can do that, right?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the traveling, honestly.
I'm sure it's going to be very beautiful. Where can people find you across our social media platforms? But more importantly, what would be your message to a young Jablile, as in young ladies right now who look up to you, who also want to be where you are, and maybe some want to even give up and all that? What would be your message to them?
I think that it's very important to have an honest conversation with yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this work, it's so important. This, you know, storytelling is everything, right? It really does change the world. So if that is something that you truly aspire to do, then, you know, once you start, don't ever let go. You know, don't ever lose that momentum.
Yes.
It's going to be tough. Trust me, I've been there.
Yeah.
But you know, you need to remind yourself of what purpose you're serving.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and look at it in that bigger picture. You know, you're changing the world, you know, one step at a time.
One step at a time.
Yeah. So yeah.
And social media, where can people find you?
Excuse me. So I'm on Instagram. It's Jabulile _ Mbata _.
Yes.
X.
Yes.
Formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah.
It's at J.
Yeah.
_ Mbata.
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook as well. I know
okay.
a lot of people don't use Facebook anymore, but
yeah.
it's really great with stories.
Yes.
So as well, I'm Jabulile Mbata there.
Yeah.
And then TikTok, I'm still working on that. I want to start soon.
Yeah, that one is very difficult for all of us. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where they can find you. Well, thank you so much, ma'am. I really enjoyed this conversation. And I wish you nothing but the best for 2025 and beyond. And I really wish God's blessings for you. And I will just find my way to chat to you about being in the back, but I really wish you the best with all the endeavors that you want to take as well.
Thank you. I truly appreciate it. And thank you to your listeners for giving me their time.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Ah, of course, that was Sis Jablile talking to us this evening about herself, her work, and what she does. What a beautiful, beautiful conversation. And we really appreciate her.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.